Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, a beautiful afternoon for a good game of football now, and it looks as though we have the makings of it.
Barnes has come in. Oh, a fine goal by John Barnes. That's a beauty.
Hello and welcome to the Watford Buzz podcast. My name is Matt Messiano and we're finally a trio once more as I'm joined by Jordan Weimer and Tom Burdell to discuss the end of the Valerian Ismail era. Yep, Val was sacked Saturday evening in weird circumstances. Actually, it's worth talking about this because it was quite peculiar, wasn't it? That it was announced during the ITV highlights, which I've not seen before.
Yeah, that was an odd one. Very strange.
Yeah. Tom, did you see that?
I didn't. I was out all day Saturday and I had a migraine. I was in bed and then I woke up about 11:30 at night, looked at my phone and saw that this had all unfolded and I was like, what the hell have I missed? So I missed but pretty wild.
Mm. Yeah, I was out as well. I had to shoot off straight after the game and then by the time I got to check my phone again, I saw the highlight report thing and then it went straight into the actual official announcement. So a whirlwind of news in a short space of time. But yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then right at the top, what do we think on this decision? Is it something that we are broadly in favour of or oppose or neutral? How are we feeling after this news has had a chance to settle for a moment?
I'm never in favour of a manager losing his job, and Ismail is no exception. I think the fact that we have kept him for as long as we have made it a bit tougher because, you know, you started to get a bit of an idea of his personality and kind of warm to him more than we've had the opportunity to do with a lot of managers. I think the fact that it took as long as it did, given we've been so poor since Boxing Day, says to me that the club were reluctant to do it, either because they really believed in him or more likely they were being belligerent, tight-fisted and didn't want to have to revert to type and sack yet another manager after making such a song and dance about staying true to him and keeping the faith in him earlier in the season. However, taken as a whole, I think he's done a good job. If you say we're 13th with 9 to play, I think that's about where I'd expect us to be. Bit of luck, we might be a few places higher. Bit of misfortune, a few places lower. The problem is that the trend is so negative now with 1 win in 12 in all comps and 7 defeats in 9 and that horrendous run of fixtures coming up on the rails that something had to change because I personally had no confidence in us getting the results required to stop that becoming a true relegation battle in the next few weeks. And I think that's the crux of it. They've gone for the kind of short, sharp shock factor. We don't need many more points, but I don't think we were going to get them under him. So it was probably, sadly, regrettably, the right decision for me.
Mm. Was it the right time though, Tom?
They couldn't have left it any later, I don't think, because Birmingham is the winnable game, isn't it? Out of that run of fixtures that we've got, I won't read them all off, but I'm sure they're kind of burned into people's minds that we've got Leeds on Good Friday after the international break, and then West Brom the other side of that.
Preston's coming up as well.
That's it. And, you know, pretty much everybody there is in either, if not the top six, top half, and in improved form. Even the, you know, the teams outside the top six at the moment will have a sneaky eye on squeezing into the playoffs. So it's a pretty unenviable run. And when we can't win at home, I think it was now or never. And I think the fact that they did it pre-Birmingham rather than post-Birmingham going into the international break says that they'd lost faith in his ability to get the points required.
Okay. Jordan, right decision and also right time?
I don't know. I think you have to kind of look at it in a couple of different ways. Ultimately you're looking at performance over recent weeks, and I think clearly the performance levels just weren't there. It didn't look... You know, we had opportunities to really motivate ourselves to be prepared for games. You can talk about, you know, league position, you know, the trajectory we're on, some players getting fresh opportunities, even things as simple as, or something as seemingly small as the text message back and forth that was observed on Dean Austin's phone during the week as well. Little motivational aspects, you would kind of hope to see some life. And I thought we did see some of it in that early phase of the first half, but it just, it maybe felt like it had gone a bit too far and there just wasn't that ability to turn things around. And that's the decision you're making at that point, is this salvageable in any capacity? And, you know, maybe there's some positive to come from that coach in the future if he stayed a little bit longer, but can you afford to even get to that point? Can you take that risk? And, you know, clearly we decided no. In terms of if it's the right decision, I'm a little bit torn on it, to be honest with you. I think, and ultimately, as I've said on here before as well, but to me, I think we're at the point where it almost doesn't matter who's in charge, we're still going to face these problems at some point. It needs to be dealt with at a much higher level. But if you're talking about the cold, immediate performance, then you can see the logic in the change. Whether or not we're able to see improvement based on, you know, who comes in and who replaces is kind of the real question now, I suppose. And in terms of timing, as Tom said, if you're going to do it, it kind of has to be now. This gives you a bit of time to get that, you know, winnable game in, as you say there, Tom, and then you've got a bit of a break as well to potentially help your claim and avoid relegation now, I guess, is the target.
Does it have to be now, though? Couldn't it have been 2 weeks earlier?
Oh, okay.
It could have been.
I mean, yeah. It could, but I think that he had to be really sure this time. I think he would have loved nothing more in some ways than us to pick up, you know, 6 points or in the last week and not have to make that decision. I don't think he wanted to pay out those contracts right away. I don't think he wanted to go through this process, most likely. So I think he held on much longer than he would have done because of other circumstances around the situation. But it felt like, it, in terms of leaving it as late as possible, this is probably close to, I'd say, maybe after the Birmingham game, but that international break seemed like a real turning point potentially.
Yeah.
The other thing here is that's assuming this is the only change, because I can still see a world in which we go to Birmingham on Saturday, lose, and they truly shit the bed and put Cleverley and co. back in their original positions. Say, oh, well, that was always the plan. We just needed to get through the Birmingham game and then find someone during the international break and put a proper old firefighter, hello, Neil Warnock, in the job for the remainder of the season, because they've left it very open-ended, haven't they? That statement is very open-ended. It's just like, oh, he's taking over. You know, this is the ownership. This is the regime that saw fit. And I mean, no disrespect to these guys when I say it, because I know Graham Stack and he's a great guy, but put Graham Stack and Hayden Mullins in charge of games against Man City and Arsenal with our Premier League status on the line. If they'll do that, they'll do fucking anything. So honestly, I wouldn't be, and sorry for the swearing, I would not be surprised if that was how it bears out. Obviously, I hope it isn't, because I like Tom Cleverley and I want him to do well and I want us to get that result at Birmingham. But, you know, there could still be a last kind of jumping off point to come, having just said that this is the last stage they could have done it at.
Jordan, how much of this is on Val? Is it Val's own fault that he's ended up here, or is there more than meets the eye here?
I think it depends how many layers you want to peel back, really. You know, I think that there's an element of ownership that has to be taken from the head coach. I don't think there's been a more difficult job. They've been managers appointed at bad times, but I'd say this is potentially the worst situation the squad has been in since the Potters have been here. And that's a big ask for a head coach to then still meet those aspirations of potentially fighting for playoffs. And I think it's fair to say the aspiration was playoff position, wasn't it? That was kind of the goal, I think, at the beginning of the season. That probably would have been what the owners would say to you.
Was it realistic?
I don't think it was overly realistic, but I'm not sure our owner is overly realistic in general is, you know, part of the problem. It was optimistic, I'd say, but it wasn't easy. And I think clearly from the beginning, things weren't quite what was expected for him or for the fans of the club in certain ways. And it made it a very difficult role. I think there have been things that have definitely not helped. You know, that we had two bad windows, obviously not going to help at all. But there were questionable decisions made. You know, there were some substitution issues, I think, that have started to plague us. Something that was very positive almost early on, that as the season went on, started to become a little bit more questionable, frustrating at times. But yeah, I think we saw a change in approach as well, which had some immediate success. But when it stopped working, we didn't really see much adjustment from there on. And when we did, it was just a little bit too late, and it was kind of ineffective because I think we'd gone too far for any sort of small incremental or sort of small adjustment to have a large effect. I think we were too far gone, and the players just didn't look themselves at all. And yeah, it was unfortunately something which seemed on the surface to have fizzled out beyond repair.
Elements of bad luck as well, Tom?
Don't know, to be honest with you. I don't think he certainly can't claim bad luck in the way that Slaven Bilic could with the injuries and, you know, having a midfield that had Gaspar and Ngakia in the middle, for example.
You could argue that from the very first sort of word go that one of his players that he probably identified as being key, Imran Luza, didn't seem to be there from the off, which didn't help.
It didn't.
And then in the transfer market, did he get the striker that he wanted? I mean, you know, there's lots of things you could talk about, I suppose, that maybe is beyond his control.
So on loser, I think that's on the coach to, you know, I don't think that's luck. I think that's on you as head coach. That is in your remit. That is in your gift to coax the best out of them. Now, obviously, some players are, and I'm not accusing loser of this, but some players, you know, down tools and they're kind of beyond that. But, you know, to the best of your ability, you've got to get something out of them. I do think it's amusing how many people have now used Imran Luza on Twitter. Oh, heaven forbid Twitter. Have used Imran Luza as something to bash him over the head with, and his failure to get the best out of him as a reason he had to go, when I think everyone sort of did a big old shrug when he finally left and said, well, he's been crap for 4 months. But anyway, on the transfer front, and I dare say we might get into this in a bit more detail because there's been some interesting and quite thorough reporting from Andrew French on this for the Watford Observer. It's hard to know. It's really hard to know. You have to take, I've not got any kind of privileged information to share, but therefore I suppose I have to take at face value what is reported and what we are told by the club, and that is that he was part of the recruitment team, the recruitment party, and he was the one who had his name put to the sacking of Ben Manga. So, you know, presumably there was some grain of truth in it, so he had the ability to influence it, whether it was as much as we might have been led to believe, who knows. But yeah, I don't know if I can call that luck either, if I'm being really pernickety.
Fair enough. That's why we look into it.
Is it not slightly weird to have a situation where you're offered a player who you refuse in the summer when we still needed that position? You come to January, you've got control of the window, but then you're looking to bring in a player who obviously benefits the club, but doesn't, I don't know, it's a little off to me. But
well, I suppose at that point it might have been, well, I mean, it clearly was, he was, the club was in a bit of a problem. You know, I think Val could probably see that at that point, and maybe it was worth taking a punt. Whereas at the start of the season, that punt wasn't necessary, maybe.
Yeah, potentially. Potentially. There's a lot. I think I read that article. Again, it's not questioning the validity of the article, the intent or anything, but I have a lot more questions from that article than answers because of the just the strangeness and the diversion from where we've been previously in terms of how we recruit and the manner in which we approach it. So it's very interesting, but it doesn't fill me with a ton of confidence, I'll say that.
Okay. We like to think of ourselves as more of a tactical pod. What was it about Val's tactics, what he was trying to achieve in games that he wasn't able to have the success that he wanted on the pitch if we, you know, completely forget about transfers and that sort of thing?
I think for me, there wasn't a clear identity ever. And that was a big part of the problem. You look at everything that we read and everything that we heard in the summer and the start and from previous jobs, and you had what you thought was a pretty clear idea. Actually, this was a bloke who very clearly had an identity and how he wanted his team to play. We expected them to play 3-4-3. He said the word intensity over and over and over, and we saw it in that QPR game. And then gradually less and less for a few weeks, and to the point that it kind of dissipated entirely. And, you know, intensity is the last adjective I would use to describe some of our performances in the final weeks. I went to the Huddersfield game and it was so far from being intense in team play and individual play and how we built up and how we defended, in and out of possession, in transitions going both ways. It was the furthest thing from intensity. And, you know, he obviously reserves the right to adapt as he goes, and, you know, you'd bash him over the head with this as a criticism if he came in and tried to play a way that we clearly weren't suited to. But I'm not sure he ever really got his blueprint, you know, made his blueprint clear and imparted his ideas on the team as he would have liked. And in the final few weeks, we changed system, seemingly not a random, but more than ever. And I think that is a indication for me that he knew he needed to try something new, try anything to get a tune out of them. They were 4-2-3-1 at Millwall. They changed again for the Swansea game. So I think that was a big part of it, and probably in a sense a failure to actually play to the best, utilise the players that he did have and the tools and the weapons that he did have as well as he might have, and that has cost him, because ultimately the majority of our fans only see the home games, and they have been so bad and so just dull for so long that, you know, you lose people. The away support might be the more vociferous and what have you at times, but the home support still counts to the majority of your fan base, and that's where you lose people, I think. And I think he has been losing people in increasing numbers since the turn of the year.
Jordan, did Val always have the personnel at Watford to be able to implement his ideas, or was it always going to need key people to come in the transfer window? Or trying to get here is, was his plans feasible from the start, or was it always going to require injection from transfer funds?
I think it needed help. I think we saw that in the first five games. You know, I've said this tirelessly, and I'm sorry to repeat it again, but I think if you really want to kind of figure out what they were trying to do in that coaching team with this squad, you just have to look at the preseason, the first five or six games of the season. Obviously a much different approach, and it did require help. And I think we touched on in the last episode too. There's a big reason why Shaq Ford was playing at six and Siriato was playing there as well. It's because we needed help. We needed options in that position that we clearly didn't have. And we didn't really do anything to fix that. You know, we obviously made a change in that position that coincided with a change of approach in general. I'd say we did have an identity early on, and you can tell the difference very quickly between a style of play that is thought about and you know, pondered over and actually kind of worked into a team over a period of time, as opposed to what we saw towards the end of the season, which had a much more of a feel of of what we've seen in recent years at Watford. You know, when things have gone stale in the past, it's a common trend that football starts to look like that when the club's performing poorly, when it's getting towards the end of something, and ideas become a little bit more scattered and fragmented, and there's less direction and cohesion. It looks like you've got a group of players that have been thrown onto the pitch, and the players start to fall into their tendencies as as an individual rather than falling onto the worked on method of the team, you know. So it does look much more improvised and poor, and that's kind of what we saw again. So without help, that was always a possibility, and I do respect the shift they made, the philosophy shift they made to adapt to as a side who were able to counter and be a little bit more conservative at times, but have use that pace, use that power where applicable to hurt teams. And it was an important spell of fixtures where we made that change, and it was effective right up before the African Cup of Nations, and things started to really shift from there, didn't they? So I think it was kind of doomed to fail once we got past January without any support, personally.
Was it a mistake in the first place to hire Val, given that clearly the ownership knew how many funds was available to bring to the team? Is it the right thing to hire someone who's going to need a lot of personnel to come in to change what they already have?
I think it's never going to be, it's very rarely going to be a perfect situation where you can always, I mean, the coach is always going to want more, and, you know, everyone would love to have certain things. It's never going to be perfect, but I think you'd have to use that, you'd have to include that into your judgment of the performance that we're seeing. And I think if the coach felt comfortable to try and persist with something which was fragile, you know, we were conceding opportunities, we were losing or drawing games that we maybe could have won had we had a bit more of a bit more nous and a bit more pragmatism to our play. Potentially we were exposed at times. If he had that freedom in mind that he could still gonna go through that and look at it as more of a transitional phase over the course of months rather than game to game, you maybe wouldn't have had to have that kind of need for immediacy and trying to kind of chase those results, which effectively didn't really end up working either anyway. I mean, I'm not convinced that we'd be in a worse league position had we just persisted with what we were trying to do at the beginning of the season than where we are now. So, you know, it's a wrong decision if you don't feel that there's time to implement that. And, you know, that, again, not to say that weren't things that are done incorrectly, maybe things could have been done better from Ismail's side as well. But I think if you're trying to look at your investment in a person, in a coach, as an owner, you have to establish where they are, where your club is when they come in, to really have a sensible time frame to work within. Otherwise, you know, things become very reactionary. And at one point you'd assume there was that when there was a 5-year contract offered, but it was not long after that that things changed. So it's just a very odd one. And it kind of points towards either a lack of understanding or a lack of a collective idea between, you know, those at the top. I'm not entirely sure, but it in hindsight, it doesn't look like a good decision because it's turned out, I guess, relatively poorly.
Let's have a look at some of the big decisions that Val made then during his tenure. One of the first ones, I suppose, was Dan Backman captain. Tom?
See what you've done there. It's not worked out, has it? I have to admit that. I think it could have worked out. People wrote him off before from the word go, but it has not worked out. And that will be one of the many things that people use, you know, pin up near the top of the list of evidence for reasons why he should have gone. I maintain that Backman is disproportionately unpopular with sections of our social media fan base. I will never fully get my head around that, but I think everyone's got such an myself included, has got such an entrenched position on him now that no one is going to give an inch. But no, you have to say that has worked against him. It would be interesting to look back on the games and see, you know, in that first chunk of the season, how many points did he cost us? Because I've got no idea, genuinely. But, you know, had he felt more empowered to drop him because he hadn't made him virtually undroppable by appointing him as captain, would he have dropped him sooner? Would he have brought Hamer in? Would we have kept more clean sheets, et cetera, et cetera? It's, you know, it's ifs and buts, but there's another but. It would be an interesting exercise, certainly.
Mm. Okay. Bringing in Mileta Rajovic as the key marquee signing.
I don't know how much of that is on him. That's the problem. You know, yeah, I think that's, again, that's fair. One that was, But you know, it's worth mentioning too, is during that time, and it's during that time that the Manga was still at the club, wasn't he? You know, he was still active, but it wasn't a Manga player, and it was just this whole, it was an early warning sign. I think even at the time it felt as such, that it's a weird club to operate in at times, and it's a very strange thing when you have players signed by, you know, recruitment staff that isn't signed off by others and potentially more senior position. It's just a strange thing. But it was certainly one that, you know, whilst obviously he's contributed to some goals, but not necessarily one that you would have outlined as a target for Ismail.
Okay. Changing Backman for Ben Hamer was a pretty big decision.
Yeah, and this is the thing that I think most people were pleased about or bought into with him. They were pleased about the individual decision, but I think most people bought into the fact that he clearly wasn't afraid to make the big decisions. You know, I think it would be hard to accuse him, and I have still seen people do it, but it would be hard to accuse him of being kind of under the thumb of the club and being a club man and towing the party line. I think you can say he always did what he felt was right, and he probably kind of lived and died by his own sword in that respect. But this was one of the better decisions, because I wouldn't have done it, you know, and I don't think many supporters would have expected a situation where Ben Hamer came in and did as well as he did. I think he was probably harshly dropped. I think Backman was probably allowed to go on longer while struggling than Hamer was. But yeah, I think actually in the situation, that's one where you could chalk up as a success.
Okay. Dele Bashir at right back was a big decision.
Yeah. I mean, the Andrew situation is obviously a complex one in itself, but you know, there were elements of it which I can understand. There were periods where we were out of options, where Ngakoue and Andrews were both out, weren't there too? So, I mean, again, to me, this is an example of squad building and poor squad building in that to leave in a situation where those kind of questions have to even be asked and considered. So, I'm not really going to put that on him. You know, maybe he could have changed it a little bit quicker, but in an ideal world, you'd have a backup right back that was available more often, I think, is the main thing.
Okay. His method of punishing players for various things, lateness, etc., was, you know, a key part of his management style.
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, actually, because I've seen, you know, people kind of reflecting on his reign and saying, well, you know, one of the things he did do was instill some discipline and change the culture. And obviously we only know what we see, right, on a match day and the bits that kind of come out of the club one way or another. And this was one of the things. And I've never been aware of us doing it, certainly not pre-game, saying, oh, you know, player X has dropped out today for a disciplinary issue. Plenty of times players have dropped out without any explanation, then the manager said afterwards, oh, they've been late or whatever, or kind of, you know, said, oh, it's an internal issue or whatever, and you kind of can join the dots. But I think actually being proactive and coming out and saying, this is why, and these are the expectations we have, I think that was a good thing. And whether or not he kind of reset the culture or instilled discipline, who knows? The other thing I was going to say on this, just as a side point, is we've not heard of players being dropped from the team for lateness or other discipline issues for a long time. Is that because they've kind of pulled their socks up, or he's given up, or the club have just given up reporting it? I don't know, but I would be interested to know, certainly. But no, I think that was a good thing, and the kind of openness of communication as a whole, as a wider piece, was a good thing as well. Even if it was more club than Valeri and Ismail himself.
Keeping Ryan Andrews on the sidelines under suspicious reasons.
I think, again, it's so tough to say without knowing the actual reason. I think
it's obviously come back. It's all speculation. You're right.
It is
right.
Speculation. I'm not entirely sure. I think we needed him. I think he should have come back in earlier. I think he's definitely one that he could have played more minutes. You know, if he was truly not available for fitness reasons, then that's, you know, they're making a judgment call there, and that's what the medical staff are there for, is to help assist in those decisions. So I'm not as against it as some were, to be honest with you. It's not the one that really got to me, to be honest with you. But I do understand the frustration when you've got a good player sat on the bench in a team that's struggling. That's always going to have a level of frustration associated with it.
Okay, cool. Tom, any positives that have come out of this reign under Ishmael that you think, yeah, you know, that's really been good?
That's a really good question. I think there are, yes. I think there is the fact that we've shown we can give a manager time and improvement follows, because that first 10 games, was it 2 wins, 3 draws, and 5 defeats, I think I read earlier today, something like that. 5 defeats, definitely, the other two, I can't remember. Giving him a new contract was, you know, moronic, but, you know, it's really just playing to the gallery, wasn't it? You're just sort of giving it the big one, flexing your muscles. But after that, we went on, not immediately, but an improved run. And I think history has shown, Rob Edwards being obviously the most recent and painful example, that other managers haven't been afforded that. I think the discipline, as mentioned, was another thing that, you know, the whether it's always existed in that way and we just communicated it better, I don't know the extent of it, but I liked that. And I think, to be honest, this one's almost could have been agnostic of Ishmael. Anyone could have come in and done this, because a lot of the decisions were probably taken out of his hands. But just the general reset, I do think a lot of this season has been enjoyable. I still maintain that. The first however many games, we were kind of getting used to it and what have you. Then we went on the good run through the autumn and the early part of the winter and you know, had the comeback wins, and that was enjoyable. It's only really the last couple of months that have been just miserable. And as I say, I think, you know, anybody could have come in and had that. But the general reset, getting rid of some of the egos and the overpaid, over-the-hill players that, you know, promise much and deliver little, that has been good. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. As bad as the last, you know, 8, 9, 10 games have been, we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that there has been progress on that front this season. So there have been positives. But any time you sack a manager after, what are we, 30-something games, 37 games, I think you probably have to consider it a failure overall, as Jordan said earlier.
Mm. Any more on Val before we move on to Cleves and the rest of the...
I find disappointing, I was a fan of Ishmael, what he did at Barnsley. You know, I think West Brom was a difficult situation for him to come into, but I was quite excited about this one, more than I have been for quite a few managers. But I guess Rob Edwards, there was some excitement too. But disappointed we never... You know, I'm disappointed that we haven't been able to see a lot of the positives in the managers we brought in, the head coaches we brought in recent years. And I think that's something we have to bear in mind. And a lot of the frustration goes towards the coach. And we've been guilty of it as a fan base. We've criticised moving on from coaches quickly and then jumped towards their sacking when we've become frustrated ourselves. And I'm not saying it was the wrong decision to move on from Ishmael. It might well turn out to be the right one. But, you know, I think there has to be the thought of, if this keeps happening so consistently with head coaches, there's got to be more to it, and there's got to be issues that have to be resolved. And I think a lot of that frustration should still kind of end up towards the ownership and really the place that can make the difference and allow these guys to come in and coach and do so in potentially more hospitable situations where you can fully see what these guys can and can't do. I don't think we've got to see the full extent of a coach for quite a long time. And yeah, I'm disappointed that I feel like we've missed an opportunity in the last couple of seasons with the likes of Edwards and also, in my opinion, Ishmael now as well.
Mm. Do you reckon they could have got through to the end of the season and remained in the Championship with him, or was it too risky, Tom?
I think we probably will stay up, yes, because I still think, although the points gap is closer than you'd want it to be, there are there are too many teams to go through. However, I wouldn't want to rest on our laurels with that kind of rationale. So I think we could have, but I still maintain it was regrettably the right decision or the best decision to take with all the information and what have you available.
Would you like to give Ishmael's tenure a grade, like a school grade, Tom?
Yes, yeah. I will give it a, not least because I scribbled this down as something we could do, I would give it a C+.
Yeah, if you'd said no, I'd have been very annoyed then, because you know what? Fair. I think C plus is about right, actually, but just not to say the same as you. Let's go for a C minus. Why not?
I'm just going to go to Tom as well and say a C plus. I'm going to say C plus. But I think a C plus had the potential to be a B plus, potentially even an A. And I think we saw the floor of what this team could be in the last few weeks, I'm afraid.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that departure means that somebody else has to come in. And in the meantime, that role has gone to Tom Cleverley, the interim head coach, as he is now to be called, and he's been given a backroom staff as well, which we'll go through. But first of all, your thoughts on the news that Tom Cleverley is going to be in charge for however long it happens to be.
I think we like Tom Cleverley as a person, as you know, as a servant of the club, as they say. And
it's an easy win for the fan base, isn't it? Yeah,
it is. It is in some ways. Yeah, I think. The impression I get, I know we're about to talk about the backroom and so on, but the backroom staff was announced today, and the way that it was worded too, I think we've also, I'm not sure we discussed that before we started recording or not, but the way that it was worded in the announcement of Tom Cleverley taking that role, it seemed very open for interpretation and non-committal to any sort of time length, any sort of length of time. So I do wonder if this is potentially something we see to get us to the international break, you know, if this is kind of a very short-term appointment or not. But it'll be a good experience for Tom to manage Watford, for even if it's for one game. And most importantly, I hope that we treat him well in this situation. You know, I hope that it's not just a case of using him for a bit of favour and then casting aside. I would like to think that's not the case, given the fact that he has a role at the club already. And I really hope he does well, truly. I think it would be great to see him do well. And that's honestly the best thing I can think of, the most positive feeling I can feel from this is towards Tom Cleverley personally, honestly.
Tom, your name's sick.
Yeah, indeed.
Much Tom does love a Tom.
He does love a Tom.
I do. That's also true. I broadly agree with what you said there, Jordan. I hope, more than anything, that he doesn't get, you know, used and chucked, as you say. I don't think he will, but I certainly I would be thoroughly, thoroughly annoyed if that was the case, because he's given Watford a lot of good service down the years, put his body on the line, etc., etc. And you know, on the face of it, there might be a very talented young coach there. He's obviously had a very good season with the under 18. Sorry, they second in their division, and they're through to a cup semi final. So it would be a real shame if you know, this kind of tarnished it for him. I do think, as I said at the top of the show, there's the potential here that this is a one game thing, and then he reverts the under 18s, and that's fine. I think, you know, a lot hinges on the result at Birmingham. I think they've purposely left it quite open-ended and you know, been non-committal in that respect, which in a sense is shrewd. I think it's the smart decision by the club to give it to him, because you can guarantee people will get behind him, and he will be a good shield for the ownership in that sense, because he's very, you know, well-liked. And it is a nice story. A guy that first joined us, what was it? 2010, was it? He first came here on loan, 2011, when he first came here on loan, and, you know, 13 or 14 years later is the manager. That's and you know, has been captain, gone to Wembley with us, cup final, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a nice story. So, yeah, I'm inclined to think, as I say, that it could go one or two ways, but nothing would give me more, you know, greater joy than getting a result at Birmingham at the weekend and getting a few more results before the season's out, and, you know, being able to say thank you. And, you know, perhaps off the back of that, he gets put into the coaching staff of the next manager or bumped up or whatever. Yeah, I think it's a win-win. I think it's a win-win.
I tell you what, guys, though, as blokes in our early 30s, Tom Cleverley being the manager of Watford is a very strange feeling to me. I think he's the same age as you, isn't he, Matt? Is that right?
He is 1 year younger than me. This is the first time he's happened.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
I'm not liking it.
So, you know, this is someone that we really did get to see large. But I think because he was obviously with us at such a young age, and he was really kind of, that season was very talismanic for him, wasn't it? He was kind of the kind of bright spot of our team that season. And we then got to follow his career quite closely with him being in such a spotlight of a team. You know, United obviously had loans, but United and England and stuff. It does feel like we've really seen the entire arc of his career, and to see the potential start of the new portion of that career at Watford, is there's something somewhat romantic about it. And I don't know, it's just a weird feeling. It just makes you look back at that over that period of time, and it just feels a little strange to me, because I can very vividly remember that initial spell. So it's interesting, but yeah.
Feels very Football Manager.
It does feel, yeah, it does. Honestly, it feels like a just as short a time span as well. But yeah, this conversation is aging me the longer it goes, so I shouldn't continue it, but yeah.
On the promotion thing from under 18s to taking charge of the team, it is a very nice story. But if you're Charlie Daniels, are you annoyed at that promotion? Because he seems to have been skipped out here.
Well, I think that's because it's an easy win for the club, isn't it, politically? That's the reason. And as I say, you know, he's a nice shield for them, I think.
I also wouldn't underestimate how far away youth team coaches generally are from being a first team manager. There's a lot of steps. Most, you know, the step isn't the linear step of 18s, 20, like 20s, 21s, and then into first team football. Oftentimes you're seeing these guys transition into, you know, assistant coach roles, etc., rather than that straight jump. So it's a huge jump anyway. It's a much different ball game. The responsibility, the requirements of a head coach at a team like Watford compared to the under 21s at a team like Watford is tenfold. So, you know, I think he'd have to understand the reality of the situation, and the fact is, you know, Tom Cleverley is better equipped in some ways, because he still knows some of these guys, you know, he still knows some of these players, obviously, and he knows how things work at the training ground. He's got direct hands-on experience to bridge that gap somewhat. We'll see what he's able to do from a coaching capacity. I don't expect him to be able to do a lot in this period of time. You know, it could be potentially as short as a week, couldn't it? So we don't know entirely. But I think in terms of someone that can come in there and for lack of a better term, hit the ground running, just know how to operate in that position. He can at least copy what he's seen. He's had plenty of people to draw from at Watford. So I think it does make sense in some ways.
I mean, it's a very hard question to ask this one, but is there any indication from what we've seen with him and his work with the under-18s if he has a preferred style or any way that he might want to play?
To be entirely honest, I'm not educated enough on how the under-18s have played this season to give an answer here. Have you got anything, Tom?
No, I was going to say, nor am I.
Are the 18s on Y Scout? They must be, haven't they, Tom? I've not.
They could be, yeah. There's a category for them, whether they actually upload any footage or not.
Maybe I'll try and watch a game. I haven't got... I can try to justify watching the game of Watford under-18s, I'm sure. And maybe try and get a better answer if I can beforehand and maybe talk about it in some capacity somewhere. But... I don't know. What would your prediction be? What do we think we'll see from him then?
Do you know what? From a tactical point of view, I almost think it's irrelevant because the basis of his appointment is to get the basics right. You know, tighten them up at the back, make them a little bit more clinical, less profligate in front of goal, and essentially just do the minimum required to get a couple of wins on the board. I would assume it's going to be pretty wholehearted, hard running. But that's based on nothing more than the kind of player he was, you know, putting bodies on the line and so on. But if you do that and you kind of grind out a bit of luck here and there as well, create a bit of your own luck here and there as well, I don't think that's a bad foundation to start from.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I think also too, even if you try to translate that kind of tactical approach from... The thing is, I will say about under-18 football, academy football, is it's a very stale... dance of a game that has very little. A lot of the competitive nature of the sport is taken out from it. It's very clean. It's very about the process. It's definitely not the same. So it'd be very difficult to try and establish a tactical approach from a coach at that level that's been operating at that level, because they have developmental reasons to play in certain ways rather than the need to win that game as such. You know, so it's a kind of different. A different approach, a different job almost. But I'm just looking, they do have the footage, so we'll watch some just to get a bit of an idea. But it seems the majority of the time he's playing, which might, you know, who knows how dependent that is on personnel, but essentially a 4-2-3-1 is what he's playing, or some variation of a three-man midfield and one striker up top. So, yeah, I'm assuming we'll see something similar, especially given our lack of striking options. It's probably most likely we'll see something along those lines.
Mm. A few people have muted that he might get back in touch with Sir Alex for a couple of pointers.
wherever help he can provide, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay, then. Well, we know now, like you alluded to earlier, who his backroom team is going to be. A reminder for you that it's going to be three individuals. Jimmy Gilligan, who, of course, has got a lot of experience in the coaching world, but not really as a head coach. He has been an interim head coach for a couple of appointments and also was an assistant for MK Dons for a bit and has just been in youth football and, you know, in and around the scene, but hasn't, you know, really got a lot of experience in the same way as, I don't know, like someone like Keith Birkinshaw was able to bring to AD Boothroyd, for example, but he's still kind of the experienced head in that group. And then you've also got Armand Cavaja and Damon Lathrop as well, who are going to be joining Tom, assisting him for this period of time. What are your thoughts on those appointments?
I don't know a lot about any of them, to be honest. And I proved that earlier by saying that I thought Jimmy Gilligan, all his experience was in kind of youth coaching. And you pointed out that wasn't the case. I think it's good that he's in there. And I tweeted this earlier, you know, a lot of people wanted someone that understood the club. Not that Tom Cleverley doesn't, but, you know, someone that's been around successful eras and you know, cares for the club and so on. And I think that is Jimmy Gilligan. He clearly has a lot more experience than I gave him credit for. Damon Lathrop obviously was a player for a long time in the Football League, has done a very good job with the women's team. And Armand Cavaja, I have to admit, I do not know the first thing about him. But I think it's important if you're Tom Cleverley, and I know if I was stepping into those shoes in such short notice and in a pressurised situation, I want people around me that I know and trust. So you assume he's worked closely with those guys over the last year and probably even before that, probably even before retiring, as he kind of became one of the senior figures in the dressing room as well. So, yeah, I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, God, you know, we're buggered. This has to be only a short-term fix. It can't be these guys. But I don't know what people were expecting. I certainly wasn't anticipating. Keith Birkinshaw's a great shout as a name to bring up, but someone of that ilk, I certainly wasn't expecting someone of that ilk to come in, you know, the modern day equivalent of Keith Birkinshaw. I always expected it to be an internal set of appointments. I don't know how you guys feel.
I was surprised that Troy Deeney's name didn't come up in the list of assistants.
Well, yes, if we were going to do anything external, I would have thought it would have been him.
the thing I'll say with Troy, though, is Tom Cleverley is quite a reserved man. I don't think he's a real... He always comes across as quite introverted, a little bit shy. And so I think someone like Troy Deeney would really just overshadow him, especially with...
Agreed.
You know, just he overshadowed him from a leadership perspective as a player, you know, like not leadership, but as a personality on the pitch. You know, they played together, they were in the same team. Troy was the captain when they were in the same team for most of the time. Obviously, I know Tom had captaincy as well towards the end a little bit, but I think it would be unfair on Tom to do that to him. And yeah, I just don't think it would have quite worked in the end.
No, I agree. Yeah, but it was talked about, wasn't it? But
and it, you know, that honestly, I have to say, if it was a choice of the two, I think all things considered, I'm glad that Tom's getting the chance.
Yeah, I mean, he's you know, he's been in the building, he's got that coaching experience, but I mean, I think longer period than Troy Deeney, despite the fact that Troy Deeney was the head coach. Tom's been doing this since the start of the season, whereas Deeney came in halfway through.
Yeah.
So yeah. On the Damon Lathrope one, is there a slight disrespect towards the ladies team sort of taking their head coach and placing him in an assistant role for Tom Cleverley? I mean, you know, it's one thing to take, you know, the head of one of the youth sides and move them up, but it feels like a different thing to take the head of the ladies team and move them across to a more junior position within the men's setup. That, I don't know, it doesn't sit with me right. What do you think? Am I overplaying this one?
Someone else said this to me earlier, and we had quite a good discussion about it on Twitter. Actually, not an angry classic Twitter debate. And I must admit, I hadn't thought about it. It was a guy, Watford Douglas or WFC Douglas, something like that, was his username. And we had quite a good debate about it. And he said, you know, I said my point of view on it was, you wouldn't have seen this 10 years ago. You wouldn't have seen us moving someone from the women's team over to the men's team. And he said, but you're working on the assumption that that's a promotion, that the women are so far inferior to the men that it's a big jump for him. Should it not be about equality? And, you know, that there is an equality between the two and they're at a similar level. That's the men's first team and the women's first team. And I said, well, yeah, I suppose you're right. And and if that's the case, then, you know, you could flip it again, essentially, and say that if there's parity between the men's and women, does it matter that he's going from the women to the men in the first place, which was his point. So I don't know. It's a really hard one to answer. It depends on your kind of perspective.
To be fair, I wasn't. I don't think it from that angle. I just thought it sort of harms their attempts of staying up by removing the head coach.
Yeah, absolutely. It can't help them. I mean, he may very well continue to do that as well. I don't know the exact, and I don't know when the women's season kind of finishes and fixtures, how the fixtures fall. So we don't know if it's only going to be a one-game deal for this coaching unit. As it stands, I can guarantee that if I was a Watford women's player, I'd be pissed off, though. You know, the guy that won promotion with the team and has been manager all of this season has been kind of pinched away because the men's team needs him. So, yeah, maybe that's the perspective to look at it from. Try and put yourself in the shoes of the players he was working with until recently.
I mean, you have to imagine that he's been asked if he would like it, and he's clearly taking it. So, I mean, we can't be completely naughty, because he's clearly taken this opportunity, hasn't he? So like there's two sides to the coin here, and he's obviously taken that chance. It's in some ways a good move for him as a coach, because it could put him in the window for a bigger opportunity, even within the women's game further down the line. So, from a career perspective, I can see why he's taking it. But it just did seem to me as though it was a little bit unfair. But okay. Tom, you've already admitted you didn't know anything about Cavaja. I have to admit the same. So I'm going to ask Jordan if he knows anything about him.
Unfortunately, not enough to comment on, to be honest with you, no. And I think, I don't. And these are some things I'll maybe try and find out over the next couple of days, if we can get a little bit more background. But, I think that I do feel that the backroom staff in itself, and you kind of mentioned there, even in regards to the women's team, maybe potentially not fully excluding himself from the women's job if it's a temporary situation. Because I really don't think Watford would love the optics of that moral decision that was being made there. The one you just discussed in regards to, the head coach moving over to the men's team for a lesser role and stuff. I don't think that's a great look either. I think that is far more palatable if it's very short term and he resumes his role as the coach of the women's team straight after. I don't know. I'm just trying to look at what these things are all suggesting, what these announcements are suggesting. And originally I thought that Cleverley would be there at the end of the season potentially, and they could kind of reassess when they've got that. There's more coaches out of contract, you've got more time to maybe operate in the head coach manager market. But I'm starting to think this might be shorter term than I originally thought.
Actually, reading the description that Watford have provided themselves, they've put Lathrop is the current Watford FC women's head coach. I mean, the way they've described it, perhaps he's going to carry on in that position whilst also assisting the men's team. In which case,
how full time the women's team? Do we know?
I think they're part-time.
Yeah, I think they're part-time.
So it's, it's feasible that he's able to...
Yeah, okay. Well,
not entirely sure.
Well, if that is the case, then, he's okay with the extra workload, then fair play.
Again, indicates short-term to me.
Mm. In addition, Chris Douglas will join as a first-team analyst. Val had several assistants and they've all left as well alongside him. I'm not sure if they've all left that happily. One who strikes me who perhaps was disappointed was Omar Reza. If you've seen him on Twitter, I think he suggested that he was disappointed because he felt like he had more to give, I think are the words that he used. Is it a bit short-sighted to part ways with the likes of him and Dean as well, who is also gone. In Omar's case, spent a long time in the youth coaching ranks with Watford, sort of building up his resume and learning on the job and becoming a bit of an asset to the club. Only to sort of like give him a short spell with the first team and then throw him away like a broken toy.
It's an interesting one. I think, again, this to me indicates short term. I think if you're thinking about Tom Cleverley seeing out the rest of the season, you'd maybe leave that open. But when Ismail joined the club, obviously Whitehead came with him. I think the idea of keeping Rizzo there was to kind of lead some, or kind of allow some continuity, a little bit of there's a little bit of kind of built in. Work where you've done there in terms of knowing the kind of operation of the club and so on. It's kind of a nice little way to do so, and it gives him an opportunity as a young aspiring coach as well to fill that kind of assistant role, that third coach role, which is it's needed, and it's something you can be a little bit more flexible with in terms of background and so on. It's a more junior role, kind of fit where he was, and it was definitely a promotion for him, so it was good for him. But that does make it hard when you get to this point, because if you were to say ask him to continue on, how does he feel about someone who was doing, you know, doing his old job, leapfrogging him and being secondary to that? You know, he might not be comfortable with that. He might not want that. He might expect more. He might feel that being given the role that he's had over the last few months might allow him to, you know, potentially work the market a little bit himself and see where he could end up rather than staying in that position. Maybe he's had some assurances from Val that next job that comes up, he'll be looking for that position to be filled again. Not entirely sure, but I can't blame him. And this is the risky take, obviously, from the club's position. If you're going to do this sort of thing, then, you know, these situations can arise and those decisions can be made. So, yeah, a little bit unfortunate, but I'm sure that he'll find somewhere to pop up again and he'll be okay.
All right then, looking at Tom Cleverley, what's his main challenges facing him? What is the problem with this team that he has, and how can he try and change it to get Watford back to winning ways again?
I think the main thing is that we need to be, and we did it obviously in the absolutely. Sure, yeah. We did it in the first half against Coventry, didn't we? But we need to just get back on the front foot and start playing with a bit of oomph again. And this is what I was saying, was the tactical side of it. The fact that we don't know what he's going to do doesn't bother me too much, because I think a lot of it is about injecting some, you know, some fresh ideas and positive kind of mentality and outlook, and just a bit of thrust into the team, because they've looked so limp and so passive in recent weeks that, you know, it takes a goal to beat us and we don't look like scoring. So if we can start toughening up and start entertaining the crowd and get that kind of symbiotic relationship between support and team rebuilt over the next couple of weeks as well, then I think we're heading in the right direction. But I think those are the key ones. I think if he could get something out of the forwards in terms of a bit of more kind of goal threat, that would be a help as well, because we just don't look particularly like scoring. I never thought we would make scoring look as hard as we did last season, yet we've already managed to make it look harder. Just, you know, sort out the defence, sort out the attack, sort out the midfield, sort out the goalkeeper, sort out the set pieces, because they're not great either. Try and rebuild the relationship with the supporters that has waned in the last few weeks. They should be laughing. Easy for a rookie manager.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah, when you put it like that, it's not an easy task, is it? But I think one thing I would like to see, if you could just get a little bit of that dogged mentality that Tom Cleverley had on the pitch, if you could somehow instill, if at least that was his aspiration, to achieve some level of on the field commitment like we've seen there. You know, I feel like a Tom Cleverley, if I was to try and analyze Tom Cleverley's decision-making process as a manager, what he would aspire to, I would assume that he'd be very much one for that high energy, recover the ball, high up the pitch, lots of intensity, lots of effort, lots of application, which isn't necessarily a recipe for fixing all of the issues we have, but I think it would at least go some way to mending that fractured connection between the fans and the team. And in turn, potentially still find us in a net positive position afterwards. So that would be my hope, is that we see at least early on, you know, as you say there, Tom, maybe not real kind of tactical nous and a massive change in philosophy, because there's not much time to work in, but at least doing the simple things that Watford fans like, and that is acting like you want to be on the pitch and you want to get the ball back. It's not hard.
How different do you think he'll be to Val as a presence? Yeah,
he's the opposite of Val as a presence, I'd say, and that's something that I'm curious to see how the we'll find out a lot about how the team viewed him, how the players viewed him as a person in this spell, because there should be lots of guys in there that want to do well for him because they respect him as a person, as a player, and as a former teammate. So whilst I don't think he's a disciplinarian or the kind of authority figure or potentially has that presence physically about him, my interpretation is there's a level of appreciation and respect for what he was as a pro, and I think he was well liked. So I would assume there's enough of that still there at the club from his time that are able to at least do it for him in this short spell.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, they should all know him very well. normally in these pods, we go through the games and analyse them, but it feels like that might be a bit of a redundant point now. But a few things came out of those games that will be particularly big decisions for the new interim head coach, Tom Cleverley. First of all, really, is Dan Backman. Does he remain in goal after two fairly calamity-ish performances? Some good saves mixed into that as well, it should be noted. But yeah, certainly a problem in each game. The time when he came out to receive the ball, it was headed past him into the goal. And then in the Coventry fixture where he brought down the man and kind of inspired Coventry to get back into the game. So yeah, Dan Backman, guys.
Well, first big decision for him, isn't it? And it'd be interesting to see what Tom does there. It's difficult. He didn't really kind of cement himself back into that starting 11. As you say, two big mistakes. There was a couple of good saves in there, particularly against Coventry. He made one really good save after the mistake, didn't he? It was decent. He kind of composed himself, stood up well, and really made a solid stop. But, you know, I think he looks mentally in a weird place to me. I think he's trying to be over proactive and playing outside of his normal comfort zone to compensate for the shortcomings he's had in recent times. And it's just, he's kind of fallen on the bad side of luck on a few occasions, you know, coming for the ball. There was one moment just before that, before the mistake that led to the goal, there was also a situation where he came screaming out. I think it was with Porteous, wasn't it? When Porteous kind of headed the ball down and was trying to deal with it, and Backman was there and didn't have to make contact in the end, but he was right off his line on the edge of the box and so on. And he just looks edgy and nervy. And I kind of wonder if we've... I did tweet about this, but I kind of wonder if we're kind of witnessing the goalkeeper version of the Yips, you know?
Yeah, possibly. What about for you, Tom? Does Backman remain in goal?
Yeah, I would keep him in if I was Tom Cleverley, but more from a psychological point of view now, of it makes it so much more of an issue, I think, if you then drop him again after two games back in. And I think, do you know what I mean? I just think, is there much between them, really and truly? No. If we were starting a new season afresh, and it was one of those two right at this moment, I would go with Hamer, of course. But I just think you just create much more of an issue and put much more scrutiny on it. Keep him in, try and build a little bit of confidence, try and calm him down and just say, look, do what you do well, do the basics well, do what makes you feel comfortable. If that means smashing it away first time, then just smash it away first time. Let's not bring on any undue pressure on ourselves and just, you know, start piece by piece, build it back up. I think if you drop him again, you know, especially as we've been close, obviously Hamer was there when he was a player as well, and he is the senior man, but he's not the senior player in terms of his kind of status within the squad. I just think that there's no need to upset the apple cart any more than it has been upset.
Okay, another big decision. Wesley Hoot suspended now for two games after picking up 10 yellow cards. Who comes in to fill Wesley Hoot?
Sirianta, I think, comes in. I think that's probably the most likely. Just yeah. Sirianta straight in and you go from there. Yeah.
Yeah. And
George... I agree, if only because he's a big bloke. No, sorry, if only because he's a big bloke in the same way that Hoot is. I think, you know, do that role. Does that role, yeah.
And Georgie Chakvetadze, who was probably Watford's best player on the night against Coventry, unfortunately has picked up an injury and is unlikely to be involved. I mean, it's such a disappointment because he was looking so good, but yeah, not available, guys.
God, I hope it's not a long one. That's all I'm thinking, really.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been the one bright spot in recent weeks, hasn't he? I think if it was me, that midfield three would be Kone, Delibashiru and Kayembe.
Yeah, agreed.
Don't think you can do a lot else.
And what about Emmanuel Dennis not really having a great time of it at the minute?
I'd still put him through the middle. Yeah. Rather than Rajovic, yeah. I would, yeah.
Same for you, John?
Yeah, I'll probably even start Bio and keep Dennis out wide.
Okay.
Semmer's out for a little while still, isn't he, potentially? So.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, so who else plays on the wing? Otherwise, it's Martins and Asprilla.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not feeling that.
Interesting.
No.
Interesting. Well, good luck, Tom Cleverley. We
we wish you Godspeed. It's not going to be an easy one. I think that will just about do us then, guys. Sorry for the longer episode than usual, but this always happens when Watford make a managerial change. It takes a while to properly discuss it. I'm sure we'll be talking at length again after his first game, so we've had an opportunity to re-look at what he can bring and discuss it. That will be on the after the Birmingham one, won't it? And you're actually at that game, Tom.
Yes, I'm going. Pick this one out at the start of the season as my away game of choice. Let's hope that it proves a wise choice.
Good stuff. Well, thanks very much for joining us, guys. We'll be back after that Birmingham one then. But from us, we've been Matt, Jordan and Tom. And you can follow us independently at Messi Messiano, at Jordan Weimer or at TB Burdell. Or you can follow us collectively at Watford Podcast. With the Watford Buzz. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.